This is the world broadcast of Imam Waqif Deen Muhammad Speaks, the program that's dedicated to community development and human dignity. And now, Imam Waqif Deen Muhammad.
Yes, they already knew.
He wasn't teaching them nothing. But Muhammad already told them that. He was teaching them that I'm the angel Jibreel. I'm the chief, I'm the highest angel in the order of angels. See how I greet and respect the messenger of God? And see how I ask him about the religion? Yes. I hope you understand. So much for faith. Now let us come to the principles. The pillars are principles that structure this community or the society of Muslims. Peace and blessings be upon him, he said, Buni al-Islam ala khamsin. He said that the religion of al-Islam, the religion of al-Islam, or Islam as they commonly call it in the West, is structured or has been built upon five essentials. Upon five essentials. They are first, the kalima, la ilaha illallah, only one Allah to worship, Muhammad Rasulullah. Muhammad is the messenger of Allah. That's number one. Number two is to pray, is to make salat, five times daily prayers, in congregation and also individually. Both fard, that means obligatory, and sunnah, following the sunnah of Prophet Muhammad. Prayer. We must understand that prayer here is not something that is left to the individual whims or the individual notion. Prayer for us is an institution. It's established and to be done at regular intervals, regular time periods, and it's to be done in the exact manner, exact form that it was presented by Prophet Muhammad. That's what we have to understand. All right. So this is not prayer like, oh God, help me. That's not that. That's dua. That's dua. That's not salat. So we have to understand the difference. Now, we also have to give charity. Zakat, give charity. Okay, we are talking about the essential structure of the community, of the Muslim society. Worship is number one, the worship of Allah, in its right way, as it is revealed in the Quran and demonstrated in the life of the Prophet. And we mentioned the declaration. Oh yes, no, we should go to the very first one first. The kalima. The shahadatain or the shahada. The kalima, saying, La ilaha illallah Muhammad Rasulullah. You must understand that that's a pillar of the community life. That this is one of the pillars of al-Islam for the community life. He said, Buni al-Islam. Structured. The Muslim, the religion of al-Islam is structured. Buni al. It means structured, like you build a building. Structure something. Buni al. Buni al-Islam. Al-Hamsin. On five essentials. So, la ilaha illallah then become a community structure. So we have to understand that this is not only a requirement or an essential in the life or in the heart or the life of an individual that he believes that God is one. We must understand that the society, keeping the society in the right frame of mind, keeping the society in the right state of mind, and getting the society to progress, holding the society together for the betterment of society, there is a need to keep before them the right concept of God. And we can see how the wrong concept of God have hurt the social progress of man. Am I making myself clear? I'm rushing with this, but I hope I'm making myself very clear. So it's necessary for the national and the social progress of man to have as a pillar of your community. An essential of your community. La ilaha illallah. One Allah. Muhammad Rasulullah, not God, but a messenger of God. Okay? And then, salat. It's We don't need the salad that we have if we're just going to make dua. If we're going to be this individualistic kind of religious people that the world wants us to be, what we need with this salat that we have. The salat that we have requires a leader to stand in front of us. And requires men and women to take special order behind the leader. And to follow the leader and not go ahead of the leader. That's what it requires of us, doesn't it? Now, can't you see the value of this without me going into any more detail? This needs a lot of detail, needs a lot of discussion. But I'm just hitting upon it now, just quickly. To save time and hurry and get out of here, inshallah, in a few minutes. So you can see now the social relevance in the religion, right? The social relevance, the social meaning, the social importance in the religion, the community. Okay. Then we mentioned La ilaha illallah, Muhammad Rasulullah. We mentioned number two, as-salat. We mentioned zakat, charity, right? Charity. Now, what is the social implication? What is the social implication? What social importance? What value do we get out of that? If we can't just give zakat as individuals. Oh, I want to give $10 to God today. That ain't the way we donate. We don't donate $10 to God today. Or one-tenth today to God. That's not the way we donate. Zakat to us is a community institution. We need money to make sure that we can continue the education. Islamic education. That we can continue Islamic propagation. That we can continue Islamic community activities. We want money so that if the opportunity comes for poor people, 100 poor people, to be established in some industrial field or some business opportunity. We would like to know that if those 100 poor people who are qualified don't have the money, we got zakat treasure with enough money to finance them to go into that business or to go into that venture. You see? And we're just, as I stand, we're not doing justice to this. We're just hitting upon it. But we are connecting these things with the reality that we should be in, and that is our community life. They are pillars for community life. Now, the next now is what the fasting in Ramadan. Sometimes fasting in Ramadan is given as the third, and zakat is given as the fourth. But anyway, we're given all of them. Now, fasting in the month of Ramadan. If these are the pillars, are the essentials for the community life of Muslims, where is this social place? Where is this social value? It's very evident, if you remember the teachings of the religion. The reason why material greed sets in, and we are exploited and dominated by materialist people, is because those materialistic people didn't practice self-restraint. If they had practiced moderation, and moderation is preserved for us through the practice of self-restraint. That's how we retain moderation in our own behavior. If they had retained the sensitivity, if they had retained the feelings for their fellow man, they wouldn't have gone to those materialistic extremes. Is that not true? Fasting awakens in us those sensitivities. When a Muslim fasts, his stomach is hurting. He's been eating chops, lamb chops, steaks and filet mignon, duck, and pressed duck and almond and rice and all that stuff. We know some people who eat like that. They here now. I don't have seen them over here. You know, if they've been living like that and eating like that, why, they don't know how a poor man feels. Poor man come up and say, please give me a dollar. I need a decent meal. They don't know how he feels. Ah, get away. Go, beggar. Move. Get going. Get out of here. Go. But fasting during the month of Ramadan, after about 4 or 5 days of being true to the discipline, boy, this is rough. And when the fast is over, first thing you want to do is eat with people. You don't want to eat by yourself. First thing you want to do is eat with somebody else. the feeling in you have been kindled again to see somebody else enjoy other than yourself. Right? Yes. So this is the social value, to keep the proper sensitivities in us so we don't lose these sensibilities and sensitivities that Allah intends for us, to keep them healthy in us so when we have, we share with others. So that we don't live with our stomachs full while our brothers and sisters or other needy people starving all around us. You see. So that's the social value of fasting. But that's it in a very brief report, a very brief explanation. Whether you know it or not, it also serves to check our wild sexual appetites. It makes the society more human. It takes the wildness out of the society. It brings the society more into human form. It makes it possible for us to live with each other and rest at night. It makes it possible for the teenage daughter to go with her fine self down the street in that community. You see? But you people don't fast. Ramadan, you just eat all the time. I'm scared to let my daughter come out around you. I hope you understand. You see? The value, I'm talking about the great value. Don't you know learned people have written volumes on each of these principles? Just one. They write volumes on it. And inshallah, we're going to be able to do the same. We should read what they've written, but we should write our own too, to establish the dignity of our own community. Growing community, developing community. We're going to establish our own right, inshallah. Yes. Let's go now to the last one, the Hajj, the pilgrimage to Mecca. Oh, we'll be making the pilgrimage to Mecca soon. Ramadan is coming, and 2 months later, 3 months later, we'll be making the pilgrimage, right? The Hajj. And a lot of us going over there maybe for the first time. And we want to see what Arabia looks like. We want to see what the Kaaba looks like. But that's not the main purpose. In fact, the most essential step of the Hajj is to go to Arafat. And there you don't see the Hajj. There you don't see the Kaaba. Is that not correct? The most essential step in that pilgrimage is to go to Mount Arafat. And there you won't see the Kaaba. It's not in that vicinity. All right? So let us understand that. That makes you think, doesn't it? All right. According to the teachings of our Prophet, peace and blessings be upon him, if you the farud of the Hajj is to be on the proper day in Mount Arafat. If you miss that, you have missed your Hajj. Other things, if you miss, some are very important. Quite naturally, it hurts your Hajj, but there are some allowances made. Certain allowances are made. And if you something happened that actually make it necessary for you to just go back, if you just went to Arafat and you go back home, your Hajj has been considered. I'm not correct. There's a brother who has an information. He has been with Muhaddis. He just come from over there. He has a lot of knowledge. We just want some verification for the Jahiliyyah that's here. Some descendant of Abu Jahl. He's still here. So we just want some help with him. Okay. So now, what is the great importance on Hajj then? Hajj, don't you know Hajj, the very word itself, implies struggle? It implies struggle? The Hajj means struggle. You got to be effort. You got to exert effort. You got to be forceful. You can't be weak. It's a man's job. Hajj, the very word, suggests combat. It's like combat. Say, well, who am I fighting? Who is the foe? Who are we combating? Yourself. Yourself. You're defeating the weak impulses in yourself. You're defeating the weak, selfish ideas in your mind. But the Hajj call you out to fight against the narrowness of yourself. And the most important part of it is Arafat. Why? Because there you're going to meet with people from different nationalities. And they all have the right to speak there. No nationality can be deprived the right of the microphone there. Am I right, brother? He's from over there. We like to hear you, see? You are my Jibril today. You have to speak. Yes, we have somebody here. Who knows? Who knows? So he bears witness, you see? On Arafat, if you come there as a Muslim representing the community, they have to give you a mic. I don't care what your nationality is, what your race is, what place of the earth you're from. So that's universal recognition to the worth of the common person. That before God, there is no superior race, no superior color, that they all have something to offer the good future of man at large. So they listen to each other. Chinese, don't you know I met Chinese imams? With long thing here, man. Long beard, two strings. You know how the Chinese look different. His beard, look at it. They got long hanging here. Two holes right here. The imam is Chinese. He's there. And Afghanistan, he's there. The Filipino, he's there. The African, he's there. The Frenchman, he's there. The American, he's there. All around the world, there they are on Arafat. No racism. No superiority of one over another. And the black that's looked down upon in many parts of the world, he can't be looked down on there. He has to come to the mic. He comes with the authority of Quran and Muhammad. And he comes to the mic. And he speaks to the dignitaries of the world, all nationalities. And they sit and listen, just give him the same respect that they give each other. We saw that, didn't we, in Arafat? Didn't the African speak? Didn't the American man speak? And wasn't he a Negro? Black man, this man right here? Yeah, he spoke to the big boys, to the big shots. Spoke. And did they say, oh, thank God he's through. Get that nigga out of the way. No. They say, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. That is Imam Waruddin Muhammad from the United States. Allahu Akbar. That's what they said in Arafat. You all go back and give that membership card back to those bosses that's enslaving you. Come with me in this religion. This is the best time ever. Yeah. New age. New horizon. New challenge. And God has given us new leadership. Yeah, you all should be ashamed not to be with me. So now, you see the social value there in the Hajj. Although there are many other things that we would like to tell you about this. But when you return, you go to the Hajj and then you return. Do you have to do that more than once in life? No. It's only required once in your lifetime. You return back to your community. Now, say if you were a person raised up in Jim Crow South or in Chicago. Now, see, I thank God that he allows certain things to happen to me because I'm a living witness. In Chicago, I've been called nigger, been threatened by a mob of white people. Me! They ran up on my car. They blocked my car with two of their cars. They got out, and they tried to turn my car over. They were shaking my car. Finally, one of them had the decency, the sense, to come up and ask me a question. So he asked me a question. I answered him intelligently. He told the rest of them to leave me alone. I perhaps would have been killed. If Allah hadn't saved me, I would have been killed. Here in Chicago. In fact, wasn't far from here. I was going to Stony Island out toward the expressway toward Argyle's Garden. And I was in the area about in here somewhere. Maybe around 79, 89, somewhere in there. No, I was farther down than that. Pardon me, I was across 79. Now I remember. It must have been between 87 and 95th. I was the 495th, but somewhere in there. And they pulled me out. They forced me off. They forced me to the side. Jammed me, one behind and one in front. I couldn't go nowhere. And they got out, and they attacked my car like that. I was a young man in my 20s in Chicago. A lot of you all don't know that this community, that right now where you're sitting, used to be white. And I used to deliver groceries in this neighborhood to white folks. You don't know that, do you? I used to come from my neighborhood, black neighborhood, and deliver groceries in this neighborhood to white folks. Wasn't no white folks in this neighborhood. I worked at Iowa's Chicken Market, 7010 South Stony Island. I have a witness, he worked there too. Didn't you work there too? Didn't we used to serve white folks in this neighborhood? All right. Yeah. So I thank God that he gave me those experiences. I know personally. On another occasion, white person said, "Why don't you go home, nigger?" That isn't me. Another incident, I was getting off the streetcar. Somebody kicked me in the rear as I was getting off the streetcar. I turned around, and it was a white man, looked like he was about 58 years old. White man kicked me in my rear as I was getting off the streetcar. I was about 15 or 16 years old, and I was filling my Cheerios. He better be glad that streetcar got away before I could get back on it. I was going to rip his chest open. Oh, man, I probably wouldn't have hit him in his face, but I was going to break his ribs. That's right. I was a boxer then, boy, and I could do something to you. I was going to tear him up. And I'm telling you, I've always been a quiet child. You all know me, and first people who know me personally, I'm a quiet person. On the rostrum, you hear the man who's preaching the religion. I have to preach religion. I'm preaching religion. I have to preach it as I think it should be preached. But when I'm living in my private life, I'm a quiet person. I don't bother anybody. Sheikh Shabazz, you've known me practically all my life. Do I bother anybody? Nobody. I go peacefully, I don't insult you, I give you respect, I was raised that way. I say yes sir and no sir, I still say it to grown-ups. That white man had no reason to treat me like that. But he saw a black that looked shy and nice and eager, so he thought he could do that. But he did, he got away with it. Maybe I'll meet him in the hereafter and break his neck. It's nice to throw in a little humor, don't you think so? I don't know. I like it. I think it's nice. All right. So they can't tell me about Chicago. But look at the South, how terrible it was. Now, suppose one of us from the Jim Crow South, or from the experiences that I've had up North, would go and make the Hajj. Suppose we had made the Hajj at that time. We made the Hajj. Don't you know we come back to our town? With a greater faith in justice, a greater sense of personal worth, we come back. You say, no, we ain't going to tolerate this. My religion doesn't show me that. There I met whites and blacks and browns and everybody, and they respect each other. My religion requires that. I'm going back to the United States. I'm going to do something about that Jim Crowism in the United States. Yes. That's what it will compel us to do. So, dear beloved people, we have to understand the value of these principles that are five, essentially five, and their importance, their significance in the community life or the social life of the people. If we understand that, we see that this religion is clearly the religion of truth and social justice. Clearly, no doubt should be, no question in your mind that this is a religion of truth and social justice. And it's very essential. Now, when we're talking about the essential, you know what we're talking about? We're talking about something that is as sacred to us as belief in God, the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost is the Christian. See, don't miss the importance. These essentials that are important now to you, in our religion, they rank with the principles of Christianity that says, God, Father, Son, Holy Ghost. Love God with all your heart and love your fellow man as you love yourself. The highest principles in Christianity are no higher for them in their religion than these points that I've pointed out to you in our religion. That's what you have to understand. We're talking about the highest principles, the highest statements in our religion. And the highest statements in our religion all speak to the need to establish an educated, free, dignified community of social justice and truth. So what is the religion of liberation? What is the religion of personal human dignity and community dignity? What is the religion of the liberation of man, the common man on the earth? What is that religion? It's none other than this religion they commonly call Islam in the world. That's the fact. And that's what all of you all have to come into the knowledge of if you want to be Muslims that are awake today. If you want to be awake Muslims in this day and time, you're going to have to come into that knowledge. And then grow more and more into the knowledge of Quran, into the knowledge of Prophet Muhammad. If you don't have a better teacher than me, grow more and more into the knowledge that I give you. So we can become a stronger and more dignified community. So we can have more life.
You've been listening to Imam Warif Deen Muhammad.